It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it's apple season in Iowa. Later this hour, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here to answer your questions about the plants in your life. But first, we're going to talk apples with Diana Cochran, Iowa State University Extension fruit crop researcher and expert. Hello, Diana.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And here we are in the thick of apple harvest season, or at least in the early weeks of apple harvest season in Iowa. And let's start with the end product, although as we go along, I'm sure a lot of people would like some pointers about how to have a better crop on their apple trees. But right now, if you're heading out to pick apples in your yard or even at a you-pick-your-own orchard, what do you need to know?
Basically, when it's ripened, so you're trying to determine when, kind of visually. So some of the things that when people ask or call in and they'd like to know when to harvest their fruit, I start telling them first kind of look at the background color of an apple. Usually it's going to turn from green to a greenish yellow creamy undertone. So that's going to help determine when it's ripe. It's also when you go to pick, especially at a U-pick or in your backyard, you want to make sure that when you go to harvest the apple that you don't rip the apple off of the tree. So you want to gently kind of cup the apple and do a twisting kind of motion to help pop it off so that you're not going to remove buds for next year or damage the fruit, which would lessen the storage life.
Okay, so you want to just get the stem of the apple. How do you do that?
So again, so you just, if you're going to harvest an apple, you reach up under the apple and kind of cup it with your hand, and then you do a twisting motion and kind of twist up so that it just gently pops off. And if it's not gently popping off, then you would determine that that apple probably is not ready to be harvested, so you'll go to another apple. But you just kind of cup it, you twist it, and it pops off. We have a video on Iowa Extension, you know, that kind of describes that and shows it a little bit more, or a visual representation of that.
Okay, so you can actually see how it works. So, all right, if the apples don't come off easily, that's a sign that they may not be ripe. You were talking about the background color of an apple. And of course, when you go to an orchard, they tell you which apples you can pick, which
right.
apples you can't pick. But at home, I mean, can't you just pick an apple and try it?
Yeah, so that's the other thing is taste. Ultimately, that's going to help you decide, you know, based on your preference. So taste, you know, as the apple ripens, then it becomes sweeter, less acidic, and so it's a taste preference for sure.
Now, I like sour apples. That's one of my favorites are the tart varieties. Is it okay to pick and eat apples before they're ripe if that's the flavor you're looking for?
Absolutely. It's a preference. So if that's your preference, then yes, go ahead.
All right. So all of those dire warnings from grandmothers about belly aches if you pick the apples and eat them too soon, maybe that was a little overstated.
Maybe.
All right. Now, when you're harvesting, you want to be careful not to damage the tree. Do you have any advice for as you're collecting the apples? Because obviously you don't want to bruise the apples either. You don't want to damage them in the process. How do you like to collect them?
So we usually have like a cloth bag that we harvest into. And so, yeah, you don't want to take the apple and like throw it down or, you know, you kind of want to just put it in your harvesting. You know, you can use a basket. You can use different collections or things to collect it in. But we usually use a bag and then you just grab the apple and then you kind of place it in there. You don't want to bruise it. You're right. Because once you bruise it, then that's also going to affect the storage life.
And when you put a damaged apple in with other apples, I mean, this starts the conversation about storage, but we've all heard the one bad apple can ruin the whole bunch. That's true, right?
Absolutely. And so that's the thing. When you're harvesting, you know, some people will go through and you're just harvesting the things that are ripe. Well, what you want to do before you store is go through and sort and only store the ones that are free of damage. Because again, yes, one bad apple can ruin the bunch.
What happens? Why does that happen?
Because ethylene, apples produce ethylene. That's another reason why, even after they're, you know, harvested. And so that's why you want to store them separately from other crops as well. And so with that bruising, that just is going to escalate that.
All right. Now, when we sort, obviously, if there's something wrong with the apple, you can definitely bake with that or eat it out of hand right away. It's just not going to have a long shelf life. When we sort and we look at the apples that we can store long term, can they have any flaws?
I mean, deformed fruit is not a, not going to matter. So, for instance, hail damage. Sometimes if you get hail damage kind of early in the season, then you're going to have deformed fruit, but there's no other problem. It's just kind of a deformed fruit, maybe some nicks. So that would be okay.
Okay. What about sometimes apples have just little spots on them?
So like fly speck. Or,
right.
Yeah. So that's fine too. It's just kind of a visual. So that would be not an issue.
All right. And then if you want to store them long term, that can be challenging for a lot of people. What kind of environment do apples store well in? I don't really like the flavor of an apple after it's been in the refrigerator for very long. So what are your options?
Yeah, so ideally, especially if you were on a commercial side where you had the cooler facilities, you want to store it in a high relative humidity environment, so 90 to 95%. And then you want to have it above freezing, so around 33 degrees. Now, some cultivars may be a little bit higher, 36 to 38 degrees Fahrenheit. And then some you'll see reports where, keeping it around 32, 30, because the freezing, the apple freezing is a little bit less than 30 degrees. But for most homeowners, I'd say above freezing, 33 to 34 degrees Fahrenheit. In a relative humidity. So now that's where, you can put it in bags to help store it. You don't want to store it with other produce. And then, again, some of the refrigerators will have little, compartments that maybe you can isolate it in.
What about like a basement space or, of course, we think about fruit cellars. People don't have those very often anymore. But can you do something like that?
Yes. And so if you were to have like a cellar and it was high in humidity and you had it, if it stayed less than 40 degrees Fahrenheit, you can store your apples in that environment, too.
When you put apples into storage, you mentioned a bag. I've also heard about people putting paper around each one of the apples so that they're not touching each other. So if you miss a flaw, they're not going to ruin all the apples. Is that something you'd recommend in a cellar type environment?
I mean, that would not hurt anything. It's just more work for the person, but it wouldn't hurt anything.
Do apples continue to ripen after you pick them?
Yes. So any of your produce does. It's a living, it's living even after it's harvested, so it continues to need oxygen it's still respiring.
All right. So if you're in a situation where you have to pick apples before they're ready, do they ripen well after they've been picked, or is there a flavor enhancement that happens if they ripen on the tree?
So it's typically you want them to ripen kind of on the tree. Sometimes if you're going to store them on a, especially a homeowner, you may pick them kind of at minimum maturity. But you do want them to ripen on the tree.
All right. Now, okay, this time of year is the time of year when a lot of us have some regrets as we look at our apple crop. A lot of home apple trees, people don't like to spray, and then they do find that there are lots and lots of insects that interact with their apples over the summer. It's really difficult to grow an organic apple. Do you have advice for homeowners who would like to have a decent crop? They don't necessarily want perfect apples, but also are concerned about spraying.
Yeah, I think, it's just making sure that you are, essentially visiting your apple tree on a regular basis. So if you're trying to grow it, then you want to go out there and kind of visually inspect it and see, cultural things you could do is make sure that you remove any of the fruit that's fallen at the end of the year. Try to keep a clean environment on the ground. If you go through and kind of prune it so there's some air flow through the tree. So you can just, you basically want to just know what's going on in your tree all year and not just right before harvest.
All right. So I think a lot of us look at it in the spring with the blossoms and then again in the fall.
Yes.
And now some years we do have these amazing bumper crops and that can actually be hard on a tree too, right?
Yeah. So biennial bearing is what we'll see if we have a bumper crop and then the next year it's usually less. And so to help with that, you can do pruning, and so kind of management for thinning, pruning in the winter, and then also a thinning once the fruit has set.
How do you thin? What's the method?
Well, at the Hoard Farm, we spray for thinning, and then you'll go through and you'll also hand thin. And so you just go through and you remove fruit. You essentially want to leave one fruit for about every 6 inches or so. So you just go through and you snip off the fruit with, you know, little hand snips.
And I know that can be really hard for people to do just because it seems wrong to take baby apples off of your tree if you're really excited about an apple harvest. What can go wrong if you don't thin the fruit?
Well, if you don't thin, then you're going to see where you're going to have really small apples. You're going to have apples that are shading each other. You're going to have missed color. Color development is going to be off on the apple in the sense of wherever it's been, you know, touching the other apples. You'll have branches break because there's too much weight. So there's, you know, a lot of different things that can happen if you don't take off some of the fruit.
If you are looking at your apple trees this time of year and you're frustrated with what the fruit looks like, when do you need to make a plan for next season? And what should you be doing right now?
Well, you can visually kind of, you know, try to inspect the tree, figure out, try to diagnose maybe some of the problems that you're having so that you can then get a plan for next year. Because if you're seeing it this year, probably going to see it next year. So if you start looking at it and say, okay, well, I had, you know, lots of apple scab, then that's something to think about for next year. So it's just making notes. And that's generally the same thing, you know, going through your backyard or your orchard is taking notes on a regular basis throughout the season so that you know the problems. And especially if you're not trying to have a rigorous spray program, then you definitely want to, you know, have notes on what you've seen, when you saw it. And so the next year, then you can be prepared before it happens.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. And you can call in with apple questions. You can call in with questions about any of the plants or trees in your life. With me is Diana Cochran, Iowa State University Extension fruit crop expert. Also with us, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. He'll be joining us in a moment to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking apples, but we're also here to answer your questions about any of the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Diana Cochran, Iowa State University Extension fruit crop expert, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension horticulturist, is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here, and let's dive right in. We've got a question for you from Dan. Our peony bushes have mildew. We sprayed them with a fungicide, and the foliage looks dead. Is it okay to cut it off and destroy what's left of the plants?
Well, if they're totally brown, I would say cut them off. But if there's still some green there, I would leave that, because even though they look unattractive, they're still manufacturing food for the plant. So if they're totally brown, then they can cut them off. If there's some green there, I would leave that. Powdery mildew is kind of a unusual thing in that we didn't see this 10 or 15 years ago. It's been a more recent thing, and it's becoming quite common. And we typically see it most frequently in shady areas. So if these plants are maybe in partial shade, you might want to consider moving those sometime this month to a sunnier location, because it's much more common in partial shade versus full sun.
All right. Next question, we've got an apple question from Tom in Bettendorf. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hi. We knew we were in trouble when every tree that we had, pear tree, peach tree, apple tree, nectarine tree, just blossomed like crazy. And I even had to take about half, maybe 200 little apples off of one tree, and I still have 200 apples on the tree. Now, the question I have is, was there something in the climate this year that triggered all that action in all my fruit trees?
Diana?
No, I don't think it was necessarily just the climate. It could be, I mean, how old are your trees?
They've been all bearing for about a minimum of 3 years to up to about 6 years.
So you could see some of that kind of biennial bearing when we were talking about where you're having a bumper crop this year. Do you, you know, so compared to last year?
They were all of them were probably more, much more than last year. The nectarine was bizarre.
Well, I would say one thing. We had a mild winter. And when you're dealing with things like nectarines and peaches, the flower buds are very cold sensitive. And for them, they probably survived the winter very, very well. Apples and pear, they're much more hardy as far as the buds, and so it shouldn't have affected them much. But things like peaches, nectarines, they are very, very temperature sensitive. So that probably benefited them, the mild winter.
Right, okay. And just to add to for what Richard said, is that's absolutely correct. For this year, we're actually having a decent peach crop this year for the first time in several years. And that was due to the kind of the mild winter we had. So,
all right, Tom. Well, it sounds like you're at least knee deep in lots and lots of fruit right now.
People are walking on the other side of the street when they see me because I'm going to offer them fruit.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your call. And that it is an interesting thing that we see with so many different fruit crops, where you'll have a sparse year followed by a bumper crop. Diana, why is that? Why does that happen?
It's the nature of the trees. I mean, and so if you're not managing them, so it's a management that you can try to do to help manage that a little bit. So cultural management is as far as pruning, but it's also kind of the nature of the trees.
But it's also the weather, because that plays a big part in it. As far as if we get extremely cold temperatures in the winter, that may kill the flower buds. If we have a mild winter, they might do just fine. But then during bloom, if we have a late frost or freeze, that could damage those flowers or destroy the flowers, so that could affect the yield. And then you can have things like hail, for example, during the growing season. That could destroy the crop. So weather plays a big part, too.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, we have this is a question that I think a lot of people struggle with. This is from Dan. I have two Bartlett pear trees that started bearing a couple of years ago. I'm still learning when to pick them and how to treat them after picking. I would love to learn what you can teach.
Well, as far as picking them, I would say there's typically a slight color change when they're mature. It's not a dramatic change, but they go from kind of a medium green to kind of a light green. So there is that color change. And if you're checking them periodically, you'll notice that. The other thing is they have very, very tiny little spots on the fruit. Those are lenticels. And when they're ripe, or mature, I would say, they go from white to brown. So you have this light green fruit. You have these small little tiny light brown spots. Now, when they're mature, they're not ripe, but they're mature. They're hard as rocks. And so when you pick them, you bring them inside, and if you want them to ripen within a few days, you put them in a paper sack and leave them at room temperature, and they should ripen in about a week or so, and then you have your ripe fruit. Now, if you have more than you want, then you typically put them in the refrigerator, and they'll keep there for several weeks.
All right, and do all of the pears on a tree mature at the same time?
At about the same time, yes.
All right, and of course it's not like apples.
You can't taste them. No, that doesn't work.
So frustrating.
Yes, it's more difficult. Yes.
Yes,
and it's also the same principle applies with storing the fruit, because if you have a bad spot on one pear, that's going to spread to other pears. Right.
Right. It will.
All right. How long can you store pears if you put them in the refrigerator?
Well, if you have a temperature again just above freezing, you can store those for maybe 2 or 3 months.
All right, and we have a tree on our property that we didn't know was a pear tree until 2 years ago, when all of a sudden a couple pears appeared. And this year we have hundreds of pears.
Okay.
So it was a good
year. You're
going
to have to find a storage location.
Yeah, we're struggling with that right now. All right, 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a different fruit question. This one's from Larry in Elkader. Our ever-bearing strawberries are setting on berries, but they usually develop brown spots and rot by the time they ripen. Any suggestions?
Hmm. One possibility would be if the soil is wet or moist, I could see where they might rot because they're resting on the ground. And in that case, maybe if they had maybe just a very light mulch of straw keeping the actual berries off the ground, there may be less rot. That would be one possibility.
Do you think that it's been awfully moist lately?
It has been, right. When you have very wet conditions and the actual berries resting on the ground, it's very easy for those to develop like downy mildew or something and botrytis and basically rot, basically.
All right. Here's a question from Laura. We have two aronia berry bushes, both roughly 4 feet tall. The past 2 years, we've had bumper crops. This year, we've had hardly a berry. I've not pruned them since planting 2 years ago. Overall, they appear to be in good health. Any ideas as to what's going on?
Boy, as far as why they didn't produce this year, I'm not sure. They're young enough, that shouldn't be an issue. Age shouldn't be an issue. I am not sure on that.
Yeah, that's I haven't heard of anybody else having a no crop this year. So.
So what should she do to try to figure this out? Look closely at the leaves, or what? How can you approach this kind of mystery?
I think maybe I would, if the plants look healthy, if they have healthy green leaves, they put on some nice new growth this year, then I'm assuming they're just fine. That maybe because they're fairly young plants, maybe their fruiting is a little bit sporadic, and maybe that will improve as they become more mature.
All right, so wait.
Right.
Wait and see. All right. Here's a question from Jefferson in Des Moines. My folks planted a redbud tree earlier this year, and they didn't look around to see that there's a walnut tree right next to it. Do I need to relocate, and when would be the best time to relocate?
Well, the walnut tree does produce a compound. It's called juglan. And juglan tends to inhibit the growth of nearby plants, giving the walnut a competitive advantage. It doesn't usually kill plants outright, but it makes it more difficult for them to survive and grow and do well. If it's real close, I would probably move it because they do like some sun. I would say part sun would be ideal for them. And if I was going to move it, I would do it early next spring before bud break.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have Maura on the line in Grinnell. Hi.
Hi.
What's your question?
I've got a peach tree that started bearing maybe 2 years ago. And the fruit is covered with a kind of sticky sap, a little black. It has some spots. It seems like maybe there's an insect burrowing in and causing the fruit to lose the sap to protect it. And then the fruit will fall off the tree before it really ripens properly.
Right. That could be insect damage because when you have damage to the fruit, they typically respond by kind of oozing some sap at that wound site. So it kind of congeals at the damaged area. And when you do have insect damage, oftentimes that affects the development of the fruit, and they do fall prematurely. I think what I would probably do is maybe take some photos of the fruit, maybe cut one of the fruit diagonally and see if you can find something inside, and maybe send those photos to our plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State, and see if they can diagnose it as far as what it is. And so I would do that and send the photos to our clinic. Their address, as far as the email address, is pidc@iastate.edu. And maybe they can diagnose it. But apparently you do have some type of insect damage, and it's causing those spots to develop on the fruit and also the early fruit drop.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Joe is up next in Fredericksburg. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
What's your question?
4 or 5 years ago, we planted a sour cherry bush. I don't know that the name of it is such, but it gives us cherries that are the same as if you get off a tree, small little sour cherries. Last year, we had a very good crop of cherries. this year we had lots of cherries, but about 10% of them had a small little faint yellow hard spot, and those cherries had a white little worm inside. And now as we've gotten toward the end of the summer, it's lost almost all of its leaves and doesn't look healthy. And I'm wondering if there's something I can do about that.
Well, as far as the leaf drop, I would assume that might be some type of foliar disease. We had very wet conditions this spring and early summer. And so you have various things like apple scab on crab apples and apples. And so you have all these foliar diseases that we tend to see in a wet year. And so I'm assuming that's probably what it was, some type of leaf spot disease. Now, that's not going to kill the plant, and it's not a good thing. But as far as controlling it, it's hard to do. I think one thing I might do is go ahead and rake up the leaves from around those plants, rake them up, remove them, and destroy them. Because if you leave that debris in place, it's going to be there next spring and possibly cause it to be even greater next year. So I would break that debris. So sanitation is one thing. I don't think I would use a fungicide because I think in most years it's probably not going to be a major problem.
All right.
And as far as the fruit, probably a minor insect. And again, I wouldn't worry about that because the population tends to vary from year to year.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Yep. Joe, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's go to an email question from Earl. I have a low spot in my yard. It's about 20 feet in diameter, and it slopes to about 7 inches in the center. I'd like to fill and grass seed it. Do I need to kill the grass before I add soil to the depression? Also, will the bagged topsoil they sell at big box stores be sufficient to use as fill?
Well, you have to buy a lot of that. I would probably go to a landscaping company and maybe see if they have some fairly good soil that they could bring in large amounts. So I would go there. As far as the grass, it would be best if you could bring in the soil and then apply it and then actually work it into the existing soil where you didn't have distinct layers. So I would be inclined to probably, yes, destroy the grass first, and you can use Roundup, and then till it up, and then bring in your new addition, apply that, and then work that into the existing soil, and then sow your grass seed. Now, as far as sowing the grass seed, that may be problematic because you have to allow it to do before now and then. The best time to sow grass seed is basically mid-August to mid-September. So,
and it's almost mid-September.
It's almost mid-September. So it may be a little bit too late to do all that, but I would still probably get the site ready for maybe next spring.
Now, if he didn't destroy the grass and just tilled it without applying anything, what would be the problem?
Well, the problem would be that you probably have very distinctive type of soils, and so you're going to have distinct layers. And so what the grass may do is if the new addition is very good, fertile, well-drained soil, the grass roots may stay in the upper few inches of soil. And you want them to go down deeper if they can. And if we have a uniform soil profile, then they're more likely to do that.
Okay. Here's another email question from Nancy. I thought that milkweed was unappealing to deer and most other mammals. A friend was proud of her milkweed plants with monarch caterpillars on them until waking on a recent morning to find two of the plants totally gone. What critter could have gotten these plants?
Well, deer will eat almost anything if they're hungry, so it always could be a deer. But there are a number of things, just like the actual monarch butterfly, the larvae, they feed on the plant. There are other insects that feed on the plant. So there are a number of things that do feed on it. So it is fair game to certain things.
All right. So it could have even been a really successful, it could have served its purpose for the monarchs, right?
It could have, or a deer may have eaten on it or browsed on it.
All right. And a question before the break. This one's from Mike in Nevada. Is fall a good time to transplant asparagus?
Well, actually, if it's well established, you really can't transplant asparagus very successfully. If it's been in the ground, let's say, 3-4 years or longer, it has a huge root system. It's simply impossible to dig it up and move it because if you do try, it's going to be injured so severely that it really seldom recovers from that damage. So We typically suggest if you have an older bed and you want to have a new one, you're going to have to buy new plants. Now, if they've been in the ground maybe 1 or 2 years, you could probably do it, but you want to do that early in the spring.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Duran, ISU Extension fruit crop expert Diana Cochran. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. And with me, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Duran, ISU Extension fruit crop expert Diana Cochran. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Denny is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Denny.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, are hop plants native to Iowa, or are they just a offshoot or left over from the Prohibition days?
We do have some that are native to Iowa, and then there's also some that are kind of hybridized that are left over. There's also some you will see that kind of naturalized along, especially old railroad tracks, and that could be from where they just kind of blew off of the railroad, the trains. But we do have native hops as well.
You know what the species is on that?
Pubescens? Yeah, pubescens is the one that we see around here.
Okay, cool. All right, that's all I need.
All right, Denny, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Cecilia is on the line in Davenport. Hi, Cecilia.
Hi there. I'd like to know, I heard the discussion about storing pears that could be up for 2 or 3 months, and kind of the same thing just about freezing for apples. Now, those fruits need to be mature, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But is it ideal to have them ripe or not ripe? Does it depend on how long you're storing them?
Right. With the pears, they need to be mature, but they're not ripe.
Right.
There's a
but
difference
they're not ripe.
There.
Okay.
Right. So they're hard as a rock when you pick them. And if you store
that's how pears come.
Right. If you store them at that point, they can be fine for several months.
Okay. At the point where they are
mature
but not ripe.
Right.
If I'm finding them at the farmer's market, would they already have ripened them then? And would my length of storage go down?
I would check with the seller, see what they're selling. But when you store them, then you simply bring them out a week before you want to eat them. That's what you want to do. If they're mature, you bring them inside, you store them, and then when you want to eat them, take them out about a week or so before.
All right. Okay. So the fruit continues. Does it ripen at all while in storage, while in cold storage?
If the temperature is just above freezing, very, very little. It's basically just sitting there at that stage.
Same with the apples then? Those
yes.
would become already mature and ripe, if there's such a word for apples.
Right. For example, if you don't have the proper storage for apples, let's say the storage temperature is 50 degrees, they're going to spoil much, much faster at that temperature compared to 32, because things are still progressing, but kind of at a slow rate, but they're still progressing. At 32, they're just kind of sitting there.
All right. Cecilia, thanks a lot for your call. Let's go next to Tim in Des Moines. Hi, Tim.
Hello. I planted 10 peony seeds. They went through the stratification. 6 seeds came up, but boy, they sure haven't done much.
Okay. Well, you're very lucky, because peony seed germinates very, very erratically. Sometimes it takes a year, sometimes 2 years, sometimes 3 years. So if you got 6 out of 12, you've done very, very good. Where do you have them at this point?
They're just in pots in about 6 hours of sun a day.
Okay. I think what I would do is this fall, I would dig some holes in the ground, set the pots in the ground as if planting the actual plants, and then put them together in an area. And then maybe take some fencing, like chicken wire fencing, and place that around these grouped plants. And then I would fill that fencing with some straw probably around mid to late November. so they have some extra winter protection.
Mm-hmm.
And then remove that in the spring and see what they do. I'd probably leave them in the pots again next year and maybe plant them in the ground late next summer.
Okay. That sounds good. Thanks very much.
All right, Tim. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's get a couple of email questions in here. This one is from Jesse. What things should be done to young apple trees going into the fall and winter?
Well, I would say that probably the biggest thing would be make sure the rabbits don't have access to them. If they're young trees, the bark is pretty thin. And if you have rabbits in your neighborhood and they're looking for food and we have good snow cover, they're going to probably browse on the trunk. So make sure by, let's say, mid-November that you have some protective device, either chicken wire fencing, hardware cloth, maybe the plastic wrap around the trunk so they can't get at it during the winter months.
All right, here's a question from Pam. We have a dwarf fireside apple tree that's been staked for one season. After removing the stakes the next year, the tree became wobbly in the ground at the base of the trunk, and it's leaning entirely to one side now. Can the tree be helped to not wobble?
I think that may be a rootstock issue. There are some rootstocks, some dwarfing rootstocks, that just don't develop a very good root system. And so you may have to keep those trees permanently staked, unfortunately.
All right, this one's from Julie in St. Lucas. She says, even the pros at Seed Savers Exchange had never heard of any blister bug problems in northeast Iowa, but I had them in 2013, rotated location, but got them again in 2014. I didn't even plant potatoes this year or last, but I really love growing potatoes and want to next spring. I found a historic report from ISU of the late 1800s about blister bugs ruining potato crops. The bug that I'm seeing is black, slender, about an inch long, fast-moving, and eats all the potato leaves, usually not until after the vines have flowered. How do I prevent or eradicate these nasty insects?
I think they're an occasional pest. Usually their numbers are such that they're not a major problem. As far as control, I'm not sure. I would suggest calling our entomologist on campus here at Iowa State. Their phone number is 515-294-1101, or call back next week because Donna Lewis will be on the guest.
Oh, perfect. All right, so next week, here's a question from Ken. I found your advice on when to pick Bartlett pears. Great. In addition to a Bartlett pear tree, we also have an Asian pear tree in our yard. I've read that these pears mature and ripen differently than the Bartletts, so what do I do with those?
Those typically ripen on the tree, so they're different. So you want them to ripen on the tree. And so there's usually a color change involved there. And when you think they might be ripe, then go ahead and pick one and taste it, just like kind of like the apples.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Next up, we've got Josie in Iowa City. Hi, Josie.
Hi there.
What's your question?
I would like some advice and recommendations about planting in the green strip between the sidewalk and the street. I have a bunch of crabgrass there now, and I'd like to get rid of that, so I need some technical help, as well as just timing and some plant recommendations that would be low maintenance, so I can stop mowing that strip.
Well, if you don't want it to mow it, one possibility would be a ground cover of some type. Is it full sun, shade?
Full sun.
Okay. You could put in a ground cover. One possibility might be, for example, creeping phlox, which blooms in very early spring. It's very low growing, very low maintenance, so that would be a possibility. Another possibility might be some of the daylilies. I'm referring to the repeat blooming varieties or cultivars like Stella de Ora, and they'll bloom for maybe 10, 11, 12 weeks during the growing season, so possibly one of those. Again, very low maintenance. So those two come to mind as far as some plants. Maybe sedum would be another possibility. Now, we have various sedums. We have the ground cover types, and then we have the more upright types. But I think the ground cover types might be very appropriate for that location.
What was the name of the daylily you recommended?
Stella de Ora is a very common cultivar. It's kind of a gold color, Very, very common in the nursery trade, Stella de Ora. But we have Going Bananas is a nice yellow. Pardon Me is a kind of a wine red. And they're all repeat blooming cultivars.
Now, do you have any recommendations for eradicating the crabgrass that has taken over there?
Well, crabgrass is an annual grass, and so it's going to die this fall with the first hard frost or freeze. It's going to come back from seed next spring, and you'll probably have to do some pulling until the weed is under control. You can also mulch around the plants. If, for example, you plant things like daylilies, you can mulch around the plants, and that should prevent some of the germination of the crabgrass seed.
All right, and the daylilies should really...
They'll fill in over time.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll fill in nicely over time.
All right, Josie, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck freeing yourself from mowing. Next up, Randy in Windsor Heights. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
What's your question?
I had a question about apple trees. About 2 or 3 years ago on your show, you had a guy that was going to have a little workshop about grafting apples, so I went to it. I got two, and one graft took off fine. On the other tree, it's just a rootstock. My question is about the one that took off just fine. The graft part is like, it's what's growing now is like a three-pronged fork. The center one is the graft, and the other two look like rootstock branches coming up. It's about, 3 or 4 feet tall now. But like I said, it started from rootstock, so it started off as a twig. Should I cut off those rootstock branches? All three are growing really well. You know, the graft is growing really well, and so, but the rootstock ones are growing a little better. Is that aiding the health of the tree if I leave them on another year or two, or do I just leave them on permanently? Or
I would remove the what you're referring to as the rootstock branches, the three, four. You just want to leave the part that took. You want essentially the upper part portion, the scion, the grafted variety that you're interested in. So you want to remove the other.
Okay.
Branches.
I didn't know whether I should leave them on to give the root, the whole tree more, you know, health, or because of the branches are adding, you know, energy to the roots. Or
well, they actually tend to inhibit the growth of that desired branch.
Right.
So I would take them off. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, should I do that in the spring, or should I do that now, or
I would probably do it in late March, early April would be a good time.
Okay. Now the other one is just rootstock. Can I leave it as a pollinator for the tree I want, or should I just get rid of it and get another apple tree?
I'd probably get rid of it because it may be a standard tree. It may not bloom for maybe 10 or 15 years. It may be a big tree.
Oh.
I'd get rid of it.
Well, it's a dwarf. I got a dwarf and a semi-dwarf rootstock, was what I was told.
Okay. Yeah, I'd get rid of it just because it may not bear much fruit at all, so I'd get rid of it.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
All right, Randy, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Patrick in Moline. Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
What's your question?
My question is about bleeding hearts, the flower plant.
Mm-hmm.
I have one. The house I live in now, a previous owner had one. They had apparently a very nice garden. I haven't been able to keep up with it, but we have a bleeding heart that when it blooms, it's a good 5 feet across.
Mm-hmm.
We've cut it back since it died down this year. My mom really would love it. I was wondering about the possibility of transplanting it whole, or is there any possibility of transplanting it partially?
I think you can. I would do that early next spring, just as new growth begins to appear. So very, very early in the spring, and get it very quickly because it grows very rapidly in the spring. So what I would do if you want to make more plants is go out there frequently in the spring. When you start to see it coming up, immediately dig it up and dig up that whole clump as best you can, and then take like a butcher knife and very carefully divide it maybe into two or three pieces. And then very quickly get it back in the ground very quickly.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next let's go to Sharon in Marshalltown. Hi, Sharon.
Hello. I have a question about apple trees. I have two. They're very different kinds, and they have obviously not been taken care of. We just moved here. And I'm wondering, The one is full of fruit. The other had some. But I'm wondering when I can prune it back, how much I can prune it back to.
Well, I think what I would probably do is wait till, again, next year. Go out there probably mid to late March. And if the trees haven't been pruned for quite some time, do this maybe as far as the pruning over 2 or 3 years. Do it gradually.
Okay.
And the first thing I probably would pick out would be those that are basically defects, what I consider to be defects. So branches that maybe are dead, branches that are partially broken, I'd prune those out. If you have branches that are hanging too low, I'd prune those out. And if you have a few branches that are growing, let's say, inward rather than more outward, I would prune those out and leave it at that. And then the next spring I would go out, and if I have some additional branches that are defects, prune those out. But if not, then I would do some thinning, where you might thin out some of those branches in there so there's greater air circulation, and so you might prune out some of the smaller branches.
All right, Sharon, good luck with that. Here's Dan in Amana. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have an oak tree growing in a ditch over by my house. I'd like to transplant it to my yard.
Okay.
What's the best time of the year to do that, and what would be then the best time to prune off some lower branches to get it as straight as possible?
Okay. How big is it currently?
Well, it's about 5 foot tall, but okay. The top was broken off by wind. It's probably 5, 6, 8 years old, I'd guess.
Okay. It's doable. It's not too big. I would do that early next spring, again, probably early to mid-April, before the tree begins to leaf out. And I would dig it up with a nice ball of soil around the root system, put it right back in the ground. And as far as pruning it, I would leave the bottom limbs for a few years. Because when you dig up that plant, you're going to injure it. And for that plant to recover, it needs a lot of food. And the foliage produces food, so you want as much foliage as possible. And so I'd probably leave the bottom limbs initially, and then as the tree grows over time, gradually remove the bottom limbs as the tree grows.
All right, Dan, thank you so much for your call. And Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Diana Cochran, thank you.
Thank you.
Iowa State University Extension fruit crop expert Diana Cochran will be back again with Horticulture Day next Friday. Next Friday, entomologist Donald Lewis will be on the air. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had production assistance today from Divine Hoff. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.